Chapter 21. Mr. and Mrs. Boffin in consultation, betaking himself straight homeward. Mr. Boffin, without further letter hindrance, arrived at the bower, and gave Mrs. Boffin, in the walking dress of black velvet and feathers, like a mourning coach horse, an account of all he had said and done since breakfast. This brings us round, my dear, apostrophe he then pursued, to the question we left unfinished. Namely, whether there's to be any new going for fashion. Apostrophe, now, I'll tell you what I want, naughty, apostrophe said Mrs. Boffin, smoothing her dress with an air of immense enjoyment, I want society. Apostrophe, fashionable society, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Boffin, laughing with the glee of a child. Yes. It's no good my being kept here like waxwork, is it now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, people have to pay to see waxwork, my dear, apostrophe returned her husband, whereas though you'd be cheap at the same money, the neighbors is welcome to see you for nothing. Apostrophe, but it don't answer, apostrophe said the cheerful Mrs. Boffin. When we worked like the neighbors, we suited one another. Now we have left work off. We have left off suiting one another. Apostrophe, what, do you think of beginning work again? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Boffin hinted. Out of the question. We have come into a great fortune, and we must do what's right by our fortune. We must act up to it. Apostrophe, Mr. Boffin, who had a deep respect for his wife's intuitive wisdom, replied, though rather pensively. I suppose we must. Apostrophe, it's never been acted up to yet, and, consequently, no good has come of it, apostrophe said Mrs. Boffin. True, to the present time, apostrophe Mr. Boffin assented, with his former pensiveness, as he took his seat upon his settle. I hope good may be coming of it in the future time. Towards which, what's your views, old lady? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Boffin, a smiling creature, broad of figure and simple of nature, with her hands folded in her lap, and with buxom creases in her throat, proceeded to expound her views. I say, a good house in a good neighborhood, good things about us, good living, and good society. I say, live like our means, without extravagance, and be happy. Apostrophe, yes. I say be happy to, apostrophe assented the still pensive Mr. Boffin. Lordy mussy! Apostrophe, apostrophe exclaimed Mrs. Boffin, laughing, and clapping her hands, and gaily rocking herself to and fro, when I think of me in the light yellow chariot and pair, with silver boxes to the wheels, apostrophe, oh, you was thinking of that, was you, my dear? Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried the delighted creature. And with a footman up behind, with a bar across, to keep his legs from being pulled. And with a coachman up in front, sinking down into a seat big enough for three of him, all covered with upholstery in green and white. And with two bay horses tossing their heads and stepping higher than they trot long ways. And with you and me leaning back inside, as grand as ninepence. Ohhh my. Ha 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 ha. Apostrophe, Mrs. Boffin clapped her hands again, rocked herself again, beat her feet upon the floor, and wiped the tears of laughter from her eyes. And what, my old lady, apostrophe inquired Mr. Boffin, when he also had sympathetically laughed. What's your views on the subject of the bower? Apostrophe, apostrophe, shut it up. Don't part with it, but put somebody in it, to keep it. Apostrophe, any other views? Apostrophe, apostrophe, naughty, apostrophe said Mrs. Boffin, coming from her fashionable sofa to his side on the plain settle, and hooking her comfortable arm through his. Next I think, and I really have been thinking early and late of the disappointed girl, her that was so cruelly disappointed, you know, both of her husband and his riches. Don't you think we might do something for her? Have her to live with us? Or something of that sort. Apostrophe, apostrophe, never once thought of the way of doing it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Boffin, smiting the table in his admiration. What a thinking steam engine this old lady is. And she don't know how she does it. Neither does the engine. Apostrophe apostrophe, Mrs. Boffin pulled his nearest ear, in acknowledgement of this piece of philosophy, and then said, gradually toning down to a motherly strain. Last, and not least, I have taken a fancy. You remember dear little John Harmon, before he went to school? Over yonder across the yard, at our fire? Now that he has passed all benefit of the money, and it's come to us, I should like to find some orphan child, and take the boy, and adopt him, and give him John's name, and provide for him. Somehow, it would make me easier, I fancy. Say it's only a whim apostrophe, but I don't say so, apostrophe interposed her husband. No, but dearie, if you did apostrophe, I should be a beast if I did, apostrophe her husband interposed again. That's as much as to say you agree? Good and kind of you, and like you, dearie. And don't you begin to find it pleasant now, apostrophe said Mrs. Boffin, once more radiant in her comely way from head to foot, and once more smoothing her dress with immense enjoyment. Don't you begin to find it pleasant already, to think that a child will be made brighter, and better, and happier, because of that poor sad child that day? And isn't it pleasant to know that the good will be done with the poor sad child's own money? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, and it's pleasant to know that you are Mrs. Boffin, apostrophe said her husband, and it's been a pleasant thing, to know this many and many a year. Apostrophe apostrophe, it was ruin to Mrs. Boffin's aspirations, but, having so spoken, they sat side by side, a hopelessly unfashionable pair. These two ignorant and unpolished people had guided themselves so far on in their journey of life, by a religious sense of duty and desire to do right. 10,000 weaknesses and absurdities might have been detected in the breasts of both. 10,000 vanities additional, possibly, in the breast of the woman. But the hard, wrathful and sordid nature that had wrung as much work out of them as could be got in their best days, for as little money as could be paid to hurry on their worst, had never been so warped, but that it knew their moral straightness and respected it. In its own despite, in a constant conflict with itself and them, it had done so. And this is the eternal law. For, evil often stops short at itself, and dies with the doer of it. But good, never. Through his most inveterate purposes, the dead jailer of Harmony Jail had known these two faithful servants to be honest and true. While he raged at them, and reviled them for opposing him with the speech of the honest and true, it had scratched his stony heart, and he had perceived the powerlessness of all his wealth to buy them, if he had addressed himself to the attempt. So, even while he was their griping taskmaster, and never gave them a good word, he had written their names down in his will. So, even while it was his daily declaration that he mistrusted all mankind and sorely indeed he did mistrust all who bore any resemblance to himself, he was as certain that these two people, surviving him, would be trustworthy in all things from the greatest to the least, as he was that he must surely die. Mr. and Mrs. Boffin, sitting side by side, with fashion withdrawn to an immeasurable distance, fell to discussing how they could best find their orphan. Mrs. Boffin suggested advertisement in the newspapers, requesting orphans answering the next description, to apply at the Bower on a certain day, but Mr. Boffin wisely apprehending obstruction of the neighboring thoroughfares by orphan swarms, this course was negatived. Mrs. Boffin next suggested application to their clergyman for a likely orphan. Mr. Boffin thinking better of this scheme, they resolved to call upon the reverend gentleman at once, and to take the same opportunity of making acquaintance with Miss Bella Wilfer. In order that these visits might be visits of state, Mrs. Boffin's equipage was ordered out. This consisted of a long hammer-headed old horse, formerly used in the business, attached to a four-wheeled chaise of the same period, which had long been exclusively used by the Harmony Jail poultry as the favorite laying place of several discreet hens. an unwonted application of corn to the horse, and of paint and varnish to the carriage, when both fell in as a part of the Boffin legacy, had made what Mr. Boffin considered a neat turn out of the whole, and the driver being added, in the person of a long hammer-headed young man who was a very good match for the horse, left nothing to be desired. He too, had been formerly used in the business, but was now entombed by an honest jobbing tailor of the district in a perfect sepulchre of coat and gaiters, sealed with ponderous buttons. Behind this domestic, Mr. and Mrs. Boffin took their seats in the back compartment of the vehicle, which was sufficiently commodious, but had an undignified and alarming tendency, in getting over a rough crossing, to hiccup itself away from the front compartment. On their being descried emerging from the gates of the bower, the neighborhood turned out at door and window to salute the Boffins. Among those who were ever and again left behind, staring after the equipage, were many youthful spirits, who hailed it in stentorian tones with such congratulations as "Nod die Boffin!" Apostrophe apostrophe Boffin's money! Apostrophe down with the dust, Boffin! And other similar compliments. These, the hammer-headed young man took in such ill part, that he often impaired the majesty of the progress by pulling up short, and making as though he would alight to exterminate the offenders, a purpose from which he only allowed himself to be dissuaded after long and lively arguments with his employers. At length the Bower district was left behind, and the peaceful dwelling of the Reverend Frank Milvey was gained. The Reverend Frank Milvey's abode was a very modest abode, because his income was a very modest income. He was officially accessible to every blundering old woman who had incoherence to bestow upon him, and readily received the Boffins. He was quite a young man, expensively educated and wretchedly paid, with quite a young wife and half a dozen quite young children. He was under the necessity of teaching and translating from the classics, to eke out his scanty means, yet was generally expected to have more time to spare than the idlest person in the parish, and more money than the richest. He accepted the needless inequalities and inconsistencies of his life with a kind of conventional submission that was almost slavish, and any daring layman who would have adjusted such burdens as his more decently and graciously would have had small help from him. With a ready patient face and manner, and yet with a latent smile that showed a quick enough observation of Mrs. Boffin's dress, Mr. Milvey, in his little book room charged with sounds and cries, as though the six children above were coming down through the ceiling, and the roasting leg of mutton below were coming up through the floor, listened to Mrs. Boffin's statement of her want of an orphan. "I think," apostrophe said Mr. Milvey, "that you have never had a child of your own, Mr. and Mrs. Boffin?" Apostrophe apostrophe never. "But, like the kings and queens in the fairy tales, I suppose you have wished for one?" Apostrophe apostrophe in a general way, "yes." Mr. Milvey smiled again, as he remarked to himself those kings and queens were always wishing for children. Apostrophe it occurring to him, perhaps, that if they had been curates, their wishes might have tended in the opposite direction. "I think," apostrophe he pursued, "we had better take Mrs. Milvey into our counsel. She is indispensable to me. If you please, I'll call her." Apostrophe, so, Mr. Milvey called, "Margaretta, my dear." Apostrophe apostrophe and Mrs. Milvey came down. A pretty, bright little woman, something worn by anxiety, who had repressed many pretty tastes and bright fancies, and substituted in their stead schools, soup, flannel, coals, and all the weekday cares and Sunday coughs of a large population, young and old. As gallantly had Mr. Milvey repressed much in himself that naturally belonged to his old studies and old fellow students, and taken up among the poor and their children with the hard crumbs of life. "Mr. and Mrs. Boffin, my dear, whose good fortune you have heard of." Apostrophe, Mrs. Milvey, with the most unaffected grace in the world, congratulated them, and was glad to see them. Yet her engaging face, being an open as well as a perceptive one, was not without her husband's latent smile. Mrs. Boffin wishes to adopt a little boy, my dear. Apostrophe, Mrs. Milvey, looking rather alarmed, her husband added. An orphan, my dear. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Milvey, reassured for her own little boys. And I was thinking, Margareta, that perhaps old Mrs. Goody's grandchild might answer the purpose. Oh, my dear Frank, I don't think that would do. Apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the smiling Mrs. Boffin, feeling it incumbent on her to take part in the conversation, and being charmed with the emphatic little wife and her ready interest, here offered her acknowledgments and inquired what there was against him. I don't think, apostrophe, said Mrs. Milvey, glancing at the Reverend Frank, and I believe my husband will agree with me, when he considers it again, that you could possibly keep that orphan clean from snuff. Because his grandmother takes so many ounces, and drops it over him. Apostrophe, but he would not be living with his grandmother then, Margareta, apostrophe, said Mr. Milvey. No, Frank, but it would be impossible to keep her from Mrs. Boffin's house, and the more there was to eat and drink there, the oftener she would go. And she is an inconvenient woman. I hope it's not uncharitable to remember that last Christmas Eve she drank 11 cups of tea, and grumbled all the time. And she is not a grateful woman, Frank. You recollect her addressing a crowd outside this house, about her wrongs, when, one night after we had gone to bed, she brought back the petticoat of new flannel that had been given her, because it was too short. Apostrophe, that's true, apostrophe, said Mr. Milvey. I don't think that would do. Would little Harrison apostrophe, oh, Frank, apostrophe, remonstrated his emphatic wife. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.